Later, the Lord spoke to Abram in a vision, saying, "Abram, don't be afraid. I will protect you and reward you greatly." But Abram answered, "Lord all-powerful, you have given me everything I could ask for, except children. And when I die, Eliezer of Damascus will get all I own. You have not given me any children. And this servant of mine will inherit everything." The Lord replied, "No, he won't. You will have a son of your own, and everything you have will be his." Then the Lord took Abram outside and said, "Look at the sky and see if you can count the stars. That's how many descendants you will have." Abram believed the Lord, so the Lord was pleased with him and accepted him.
We've done some good jobs with thumbs up and thumbs down, and maybe the furrowed brows will come even more later. But we've been picturing Abram receiving this vision from the Lord, a vision during which God promises him descendants as numerous as the stars. But during this vision, we've also been alerted to one of the big problems in the Abram story. Abram doesn't have an heir, a child that is his own. And if we look way back in Genesis 11:30 earlier, we hear that at least part of the reason was because Sarai was barren. When God tells Abram that his reward will be very great, Abram, the 75-year-old pilgrim without a home and without a family of his own, can't think of what kind of reward he could have that would match up to what he really wanted, but was sure he couldn't have: children of his own. And so Abram was faced with a choice. Would he believe God's unbelievable promise? Or would he let fear of the unknown motivate him to make poor choices, like he did when he lied to Pharaoh in Egypt and put Sarai in danger? Would he trust God to help him live into the promise? Or would he try to make the promise come true his own way? Fear of the unknown road ahead can make us act in all sorts of unhelpful ways. But God speaks words of comfort into our fears, asking us to trust in the promise. Before we hear the next part of Abram's encounter with God in Genesis 15, let us sing those words of comfort from Voices Together 596. "Don't be afraid." Scene 2. The Lord said to Abram, "I brought you here from Ur in Chaldea, and I gave you this land." Abram asked, "Lord God, how can I know the land will be mine?" Then the Lord told him, "Bring me a 3-year-old cow, a 3-year-old female goat,
a 3-year-old ram, a dove, and a young pigeon. Abram obeyed the Lord. Then Abram cut the animals in half and laid the two halves of each animal opposite each other on the ground. But he did not cut the doves and pigeons in half. And when the birds came down to eat the animals, Abram chased them away.
If Abram wrestled with fear of the unknown about his lack of descendants, he likely also wrestled with fear of the unknown regarding a land for him and his descendants to settle and flourish in. God had said he would lead him to the land of Canaan, but Abram was a pilgrim moving towards a promise, and he must have wondered whether he or his descendants would truly be able to call anywhere home. In the scene that Linda just depicted for us in her reading, we find God promising Abram that his descendants would possess the land in the future. God had done this already back in Genesis 12:7, and now God does it again here and begins to formalize this promise through what for us is a very strange ancient ritual of covenant making. In ancient cultures, agreements were sometimes made by having both parties to the agreement walk through the two halves of animals laid out on the ground. And that is why even today, people still talk about cutting a deal. Cutting a deal. Some scholars think that in ancient cultures, this ritual was each party's way of saying, may what happened to this animal happen to me if I don't keep my promise. Try to imagine Abram following God's command to prepare for this covenant-making ceremony, getting the animals, putting them in place, and then warding off the vultures while he waits to see how God will join this ritual. As he waited on God in this strange moment, I wonder what Abram might have feared now. For one, I can imagine that Abram was fearful of the vultures. They often represented a sign of something bad. But maybe Abram was even afraid of what this agreement with God might mean for him and his descendants. I wonder, did Abram ever fear whether his descendants would be able to keep up their end of the agreement with God? Did he worry that they would fail breaking the covenant? Did he worry that God would abandon them if they failed? Fear of failing is something we can all relate to. Before we hear this last part of Abram's encounter with God in Genesis 15, let us imagine Abram warding off the vultures and singing the words of comfort that God addressed him with at the beginning of this chapter.
As the sun was setting, Abram fell into a deep sleep, and everything became dark and frightening. Then the Lord said, Abram, you will live to an old age and die in peace. But I solemnly promise that your descendants will live as foreigners in a land that doesn't belong to them. They will be forced into slavery and abused for 400 years. But I will terribly punish the nation that enslaves them, and your descendants will leave with many possessions. 4 generations later, your descendants will return here and take this land, because only then will the people who live here be so sinful that they deserve to be punished. sometime after sunset, when it was very dark, a smoking cooking pot and a flaming fire passed between the two halves of each animal. At that time, the Lord made an agreement with Abram and told him, I will give your descendants the land east of the Shihor River on the border of Egypt, as far as the Euphrates River. They will possess the land of the Kenites, the Kenizzites, the Kadmonites, the Hittites, the Perizzites, the Raphaites, the Amorites, the Canaanites, the Girgashites, and the Jebusites.
Abram might have been tired from warding off the vultures while he waited for God, but the deep sleep God put him in did not prove restful. Rather, he was weighed down by a deep and terrifying darkness. God's promise, he learned, would not be fulfilled in an instant, and it would not come without the pain and struggle of slavery in what we know will later be Egypt. God's promise that Abram would die in a good old age might have given him some comfort, but I'm sure Abram felt some disappointment, and perhaps, as he anticipated having to walk through the two halves of the animals, Abram might have felt some fear about the future. What would it hold, and what would this covenant with God all lead to? But surprisingly, it appears that Abram didn't end up walking through the passage between the animals at all. Instead, God's presence appeared like a smoking fire pot and a flaming torch and passed through the pieces of the animals. God cut a covenant with Abraham to give him land, and at least in this story, God did not ask Abram for any promises in return. The promise, we learn, begins with the undeserved grace and mercy of God. Through this ancient ritual, God promised Abram he would inherit land in the future, lots of land. But did you notice it was land that was already occupied? All the names that Linda read tell us that people were already living there and sharing the land with Abram and his family. How was this divinely promised Abrahamic possession of land going to work? Did the people living in that land have a say and how Abram's descendants would inherit it? How would Abram's later descendants interpret God's promise of land? Would they seek to inherit the land by taking it violently from the Canaanites with a sword and shield of steel? Or would they try to inherit the land through sharing the land, as Abram himself exemplified in his relationships with the local Canaanite kings? Would they inherit the land through a nationalist agenda, where groups exist to protect their own and to demonize the other? Or would they inherit the land in a way that did justice and showed mercy to the stranger? As pilgrims on this earth, the biblical stories of Abram and so many other stories in the Bible point us to these and other divergent choices. Sometimes the Bible's authors endorse one choice, sometimes another. No matter how painful it is to admit it, we can't whitewash or justify, for example, the fact that some of the biblical writers depict God's promise to Abram and his descendants as calling for the displacement of the local indigenous inhabitants of Canaan, no matter how sinful they were, supposedly. In the face of this, we must make an interpretive choice. And certainly as Anabaptists, and as a peace church, we have historically made choices about how to interpret the Bible. We can center and lift up those parts of the Bible that depict God's promise as a blessing for the world, as a welcome for the stranger, and as peace on earth, because this is what we've been shown in Jesus. This still leaves us with troubling texts in the Bible that we dare not ignore. Ignoring troubling texts is detrimental to our discipleship because it can lead us to self-deception, preventing us from facing the darker side of our humanity. Instead of ignoring these texts, we can use them to reveal the truth about tensions playing out in our own time too, tensions between the possession of land and the displacement of peoples, tensions between our peace stance on paper and whether we actually live that peace out, tensions between our desire to be welcoming to all and our desire to live with what's predictable, to be safe and secure in our own land with our own rules and traditions. As we live in these tensions, we do well to trust still in the God of Pilgrim Abram, the God that a young woman named Mary would proclaim thousands of years after Abram's death, as the God who looks with favor on the lowly, whose mercy is for those who fear him from generation to generation, who scatters the proud in the thoughts of their hearts, who brings down the powerful from their thrones and lifts up the lowly, who fills the hungry with good things and sends the rich away empty, who helps his servant Israel in remembrance of his mercy, according to the promise he made to Abram and his descendants forever. Abram and Sarai have many journeys ahead of them yet. As pilgrims following a promise, they will need God's guidance on those journeys, guidance to make good decisions and to birth a people whose very existence will be a blessing to the world. We too have many journeys ahead of us. And while we have a place we call home, we do well to see ourselves in our own way as pilgrims on a journey, following the promise of the world transformed by the love and goodness of God. And like Abram and Sarai, we also need God's guidance for our journeys so that we might be a blessing to others. So, as we end this particular leg of our Genesis journeys, let us show our need of God's guidance by singing together our hymn of response from Voices Together, number 606. Guide me, O thou great Jehovah.
Please stand to sing.